It's 4 o'clock. Time now for Out of the Box.
I want to thank Dane for a fantastic melodic flow show.
Yeah, I love this little Herbie Hancock. He used to go out with Herbie Hancock almost every show. That we
he
doing,
was, because right? Herbie's so dang good.
Yeah. I hate to bring it down. All right, you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. And time for Out of the Box. I'm your host, Dave Giroux.
I'm Jonathan Jay.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
We got to start the show, man. Come on.
Okay. The show is started. Okay, so it is
12, 13. Yeah, it makes a stutter to say the date.
Yeah, so we just had that for our recording.
You know what yesterday was?
12, 11, 13?
Or 11, 12, 13, depending how you want to say
it.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. The rest of the world, that's the metric system.
You know what day tomorrow is?
12, 13, 13?
Oh, I meant 2 days from now. It'll be 12, 13, 14.
Okay.
Depending on what order you want to put it in.
All right. That's significant. Well, let's see. We've got a great show for you, I hope, I think. We're going to be talking about some news items here for the first maybe half hour of the show. We got some stuff going on at the county council here. We got some KIUC to talk about. And then we've got a little project we're starting up here in the second hour of the show that we hope that our listeners and callers will participate in.
So. Yeah, it's called Coming Into Your Power. What are you gonna do about it?
Designing a New World. So that'll be coming up sometime in the show. And as always, the phone lines will be open for just about the whole show at 826-7771 if you want to call in and join the conversation.
Which you're welcome to do. I mean, that's one of the reasons we have a show like this.
That's right. We're here to mediate your conversation, not to do our own. So anyway, let's start with some news items here.
What do you got for us, Dave?
There was a very interesting story that came out by Seymour Hersh in the British press this past week.
Now, Seymour Hersh is an old school journalist.
Yeah, he's a investigative journalist. He's the one who brought out the information on My Lai Massacre during the Vietnam War.
Right. Did he also do Pentagon Papers? Or?
No, but he also did the Abu Ghraib story.
Go.
He
there
brought that to light. So very well respected, at least by his readers, not by the people he reports on.
Can't please everybody, Dave.
Investigative reporter. But I brought it up. So that, you know, you think you can believe this stuff. And I hope that you can believe what he reports. He's got some good sources, and he's not going to squander his reputation on something that, you know, isn't right.
So what is Seymour sharing with the world right
anyway,
now?
Anyway, he came out with an article called Who's Sarin? And it's what it's about is what information do we have regarding
the sarin nerve agent?
Sarin gas in Syria. You know, there's been a couple of incidents this year where sarin gas was used against the civilian population. And at the time, it was,
which is terrible.
Very terrible. And they tried to attribute it to the Assad regime.
Right.
And, you know, they always say that regime. That makes it sound seedy and underhanded. You know, nobody really says the Obama regime, you know. And so,
I think some people do. But then, you know,
yeah, they want it to sound seedy and underhanded. You
right,
know?
Right.
But anyway.
I heard people call it the Bush regime. I heard that.
Well, that was maybe a little more appropriate. But anyway, so his story, he goes through all, you know, the intelligence, what is known, what is not known. What was reported at the time. And according to him, Barack Obama did not tell the whole story this autumn when he tried to make the case that Bashar al-Assad was responsible for the chemical weapon attack near Damascus on 21st August.
Uh-oh.
In some instances, he omitted important intelligence, and in others, he presented assumptions as facts. More most significant, he failed to acknowledge something known to the U.S. intelligence community that the Syrian army is not the only party in the country's civil war with access to sarin, the nerve agent that a U.N. study concluded, without assessing responsibility, had been used in the rocket attack.
So they say somebody used it, but they didn't know who.
Right, yeah. Hirsch goes even further when he claims that the administration was well aware of the fact that the Nusra Front had access to sarin and the means by which to deliver it. He writes, in the months before the attack, the American intelligence agencies produced a series of highly classified reports culminating in a formal operations order, a planning document that precedes a ground invasion, citing evidence that the Al-Nusra Front, a jihadi group affiliated with Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, I was going to say, who is the Al-Nusra Front?
Yeah, had masterminded the mechanics of creating sarin and was capable of manufacturing it in quantity. When the attack occurred, Al-Nusra should have been a suspect, but the administration cherry-picked intelligence to justify a strike against Assad. So, Obama...
cherry picker
lied when he told the U.S. people and the world. I'm sorry, somebody was calling in there. Please call back and we'll get to you as soon as possible. He lied to the world. He lied to the U.N. He tried to start a war with Syria based on information he knew to be false.
Well, it sounds like he misrepresented the facts by omitting key information.
Right.
That's called a lie of omission. Yeah.
Right. That's not it. So, yeah, caller, please call back in if you're listening. He cherry-picked information in an attempt to start a war at the potential for involving several nuclear powers, including Israel, the U.S., Russia, and China.
Well, now, hold on a second. Isn't that what the Bush regime did?
Right, yeah. And my point is, how is this any different than what Bush did when he started the war in Iraq, other than the fact that he was unsuccessful in starting this war.
Mm. Well, that's a plus right there.
Well, it wasn't because of...
for lack of trying.
...of Obama.
Right. We got a caller calling in here.
Yeah, let's go straight to the phone.
Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Hi. Can I make an announcement, Jonathan?
Ah, is this Raymond Cantania?
Yeah, please.
Okay, you're gonna tell us about the picketing that's gonna happen tomorrow afternoon, yeah?
Yeah, it's gonna be a sign waving to fight to increase the minimum wage at the airport intersection in Lihuli from 4 to 5:30. This event is being organized by Pride at Work Hawaii, which is a affiliate of the AFL-CIO, which is primarily a group that fights for gay, lesbian, and transgender rights on the job, but also it supports wholeheartedly the fight to fighting on the benefit on behalf of the poorest workers in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say this is to support the idea of raising the minimum wage here in Hawaii.
Yes.
What is the minimum wage right now in the state of Hawaii?
It's $7.25.
So it's the same as the federal level.
Yes, same as the federal level. It hasn't been raised since 2007. And so the cost of living since that time has raised 20%, but the minimum wage has pretty much stayed the same.
Well, and the cost of living in Hawaii is a lot higher than the mainland anyway.
Yeah, it is. You're definitely right. So people are having a hard time. I've contacted four of the, our legislators,
What do they have to say in response?
Well, pretty interesting. Bea Morikawa definitely is for it, and she's for also not increasing a tip credit, which is, taking more money away from waiters and waitresses, off their basic minimum
wage. Sure.
Yeah, so, she's not for touching that, and she's the best one so far. She usually is on a lot of other issues. Fukioka, he says he's for a minimum wage, but he's also for the increase in the minimum wage, but also for an increase in the tip credit. Like, in other words...
So what is tip credit? How does that work?
Well, like, for example, it's $7 an hour, instead of $7.25. And so, like, for example, if there's a dollar increase in the wages, and he wants to dip into that by a dollar, so that would be $6, and it would drop down. He would do it percentage-wise, for example, from what it's increased. So if it's increasing, like, to $8, the first phase, then he wants to, the tip credit, he wants to take away that much in percentage points away from the basic rate for the waiters and waitresses.
So what does that mean in the real world? What does that add up to?
Well, like, for example, from what I understand, the average waitress or waiter, you know, they bring home under $10 an hour, you know, which includes their minimum wage plus tips, you know. So he wants to, you know, I think 988 or something. He wants to get into that. He doesn't. He says he's for increasing the minimum wage, but you know that they're for waiters and waitresses that their minimum wage should be lower because they receive tips. And he's got interest because, you know, he's into restaurants and stuff like that, right? So he's looking out of the interest for that particular class of people. And Ron Kochi, according to a person that I called up by the name of Harrison Kawate, one of his office workers, says that he doesn't have an opinion right now. He's still studying it. And I called up Derek Kawakami, and Derek Kawakami doesn't have an opinion on it yet. He's still studying it. But the only one who has one is D. Morikawa. The other three are, well, I should say Kawakami and Ron Kochi said they're still studying the issue, and Tokioka already has his position. You know?
Now, what, Ray, what should the minimum wage be in Hawaii?
Well, you know, like for myself, you know, I'd like to see it go up more than $10 an hour. Obama's calling for $10.10 an hour. Seattle, they got it at $15 an hour.
Yeah, they just passed that at $15 an hour in Seattle. That's pretty
Seattle,
exciting.
Well, they got a pretty strong, you know, labor movement out there. Plus, they had that big movement against globalization in Seattle years back, right?
Sure. Plus, they just elected a socialist to the county council or to the city council.
Yeah. So anyway, they got some progressives out there, so that's a big difference. In Hawaii, we're kind of locked into this template right now with $9.50 an hour over a period of 3 years. Every January, it goes up till it reaches $9.50. And the interesting thing is that the Department of Labor under Abercrombie supports this. Not only do they support the increase, but they also say that there shouldn't be an increase in the tip on tip credit for waiters and waitresses, you know, so for tipped workers. So the Abercrombie administration says they're for it. There's a number of legislators that are for it, but then you have people like Jimmy Tokioka and others, you know, with strong business interests that are trying to fight the increase. They say it's going to put small businesses out of business, and they're going to have to lay off workers and stuff like that. Same old thing over and over again.
Sure, sure. We've heard it all before.
Yeah, we've heard it all before. So that's what we're facing. And I talked to Jeannie Kapale, who works with Derek Kawakami, and she was saying it's good possibility that it might be a hot button issue with the next legislative session.
So what are you guys doing? You're going to be out there tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah, we're going to be out there tomorrow afternoon. It's our first action, you know. It's probably going to be small, but we just want to start awareness right now. For the past couple of days, I've been going around the campus, KCC, and passing on flyers, and they've been pretty, the students out there have been pretty open-minded about this. That's not any guarantee that they're going to show up, but they're pretty supportive of the idea that the minimum wage should be raised, you know, because many of them work part-time jobs.
Sure, for the minimum wage.
Yeah, well, my daughters, they work for minimum wages. You know, they work retail, and then they also do waitressing and stuff like that. They work for minimum wages. So tips are a big deal for them, you know. It really helps them along. So anyway, that's what we're going to be doing, and we're also working on a resolution that we want to present to the county council in support of the minimum wage. So the thing is that a lot of states are taking their own actions.
Sure, because the federal government is too slow.
Yeah, too slow. Well, the Republicans have been kind of holding it back, you know. Too little and too slow. I mean, you know, I'm not really, you know, jumping up and down about $9.50 an hour because I think it should be more than that, but, you know, it's a start.
Well, that's the whole question of what's a minimum wage versus what's a living wage, yeah?
Yeah, you're right, because the living wage should be much higher.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how much it costs to get by, so.
Well, you know, Steve Dinion from Pride at Work on Oahu has been working on this issue for a long time. He says the livable wage is at least $20 to $21 an hour, at least, you know, as compared to what we're calling for $9.50. It's a real big difference.
Sure.
You know? So, but, you know, you got to fight for what you can get. You know, in Seattle, they got $15. They had $15 an hour. They had a pretty strong movement. In Chicago, I think it's over $10 an hour. And in Washington State and in Northern California, those places, they have higher than $7.25 an hour. I think, like, it's maybe over $9 an hour, the minimums. But we got to start somewhere, and Hawaii is the highest cost of living in the U.S. So,
sure,
you know, we're way behind. You know, and there's thousands of workers throughout Hawaii that get low wages.
Yeah, I always thought it was kind of ironic that the wage scale here is so low, but the cost of living is so high. It doesn't seem to match very well.
No, it doesn't. You know, I mean, we all know that. You know, and although, like for example, you know, we may be getting a few raises here and there. Like, for example, with my Social Security, I'm getting a 1.5% increase, you know, next year. It's still not much. You know, I still can't keep up with the cost of living, cost of electricity. And I know you guys have been fighting to keep those costs down and making sure that those of us that don't use smart meters don't get charged an extra amount. You know, it's ridiculous. So people are having a hard time, you know, all over.
And sure.
There's a lot of issues out there that's putting pressure on the people, you know.
So you're going to be out at the intersection by the airport tomorrow from 4 to when? 4 to 5:30?
4 to 5:30.
4 to 5:30, okay.
I can give you two phone numbers for people to call if they're interested.
Sure.
One is, my phone number is 634-2737, Raymond Catania. And the other one is for Kipukai. His phone number is 652-3684. And it's just beginning to start here, but it's been going for a while now, the issue on the other islands, in particular Oahu and Maui. You know,
so you're hoping something going. You're hoping that when people drive by, they beep and wave, yeah?
Yeah, they hope so that, you know, it's going to be a sine wave. So I'm sure we're going to get a lot of people, you know, giving us shakas and saying yes, you know, but we're going to also have the, you know, people who don't give a shit, excuse my language.
Yeah, pardon your French there, caller.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. So, anyways, but like I said, I talked to a lot of young people the past couple of days, and, you know, most of them are pretty much for it, you know. So, we'll see.
All right, well, and, best of luck to you out there.
Sure, thank you for giving me the time, you know.
Sure, it's almost 4:20.
Yes, thank you very much, and sorry for using that S word, but, you know, sometimes cannot help. You take care.
All right, thanks for calling, Ray.
All right, aloha.
Okay, let's see. Also in the news, Nelson Mandela died. They just had a memorial service for him a couple days ago.
And the media got their panties all in a twist about that.
What do you mean?
Well, they instead of covering the substantial issues, they're looking at all these weird peripheral stuff like Obama took a picture of himself, then he shook hands with Raul Castro, blah, blah, blah. Who cares?
Oh, okay. So Nelson Mandela, he was 95 years old. Mm-hmm. He was in jail for, what,
27 years
or something like that.
Yeah.
Became South Africa's first democratically elected
black president.
President, and also the first black president. So I have a few quotes from him I'd like to read. I'll just read these kind of throughout the show here. But he's had a lot of great sayings. Anyway, here's one. A good head and a good heart are always a formidable combination.
Mm-hmm.
In my country, we go to prison first, then become president. I dream of an Africa which is in peace with itself.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So, aloha to Nelson Mandela.
Well, he's certainly one of the visionary leaders of the 20th century, and I think that one of the things that people were so impressed with him by is that he managed to come out of jail and not retaliate, not strike back at the people who had put him there, but you know, worked on peace and reconciliation instead.
That was really impressive.
Yeah.
I found that hard to believe that he could be so generous to do that. So basically, I think anybody who came forward and admitted what they did, their actions, you know, they were in some position of power in government and they arrested somebody, killed somebody, whatever, passed laws. If they came out and admitted it, then they would be just allowed to leave.
Sure.
You know, and no prosecution would take place there. But if they didn't, then they're open themselves to prosecution on that.
Yeah,
so,
peace and reconciliation. Those are good moves, I think. Because, I mean, after all, you have like this incredible corrupt regime, and the number one thing you want to try and accomplish is just to get rid of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more important than anything else, is trying to create a better world for tomorrow, not so much flogging yesterday for the mistakes that were made.
Yeah. Now, South Africa's still got a lot of problems now, and even though the white minority is no longer in power. They still have all the economic power.
Sure, and I think
they own all the land and they own all the resources and they own all the industry.
Yeah, I think the economic disparity has actually increased in the last couple of decades,
right,
rather than decreased. So that's something that America, I think, can understand a little bit, since that's the same thing we're experiencing here.
Yeah. Okay, another news story here. John Kerry, the U.S. Secretary of Hypocrisy, I mean, State here.
Now, Dave.
Came out with a really interesting...
Dave, I have to admonish you for that.
No.
Okay.
He came out with a very interesting quote this week here about Ukraine. Now, the Ukraine...
Right, they're going through some troubles.
Going through some troubles there. They were a Soviet republic back in the day when...
When it was fashionable.
When USSR... broke up, they went on their own, and now there's a large contingent. The EU, the European Union, has been trying to court them into their economic sphere and political and military sphere, which is not going over well in Russia, because basically that's going to bring NATO's forces right to the edge of their country.
It's always sad when you lose your client states and then they start dating someone else.
That's right, yeah, and then move in next door.
Right.
So
and start setting up missile defense batteries on your doorstep.
Right. So the administration, the regime in the Ukraine, then decided not to go ahead with the plan to join the EU, and so a lot of riots and everything ensued. I'm not really sure. It's hard to get a good feel for what they're rioting and protesting about. You know, they show a lot of pro EU. Signs in the
right, but that's the Western media showing you that.
Right, yeah.
So it's hard to.
It's probably a lot more complicated than that. But anyway,
yeah.
Kerry said the U.S. expresses its disgust with the decision of Ukrainian authorities to meet the peaceful people in Kiev's Maidan Square with riot police and bulldozers and batons. So, you know, this is coming from the administration that addressed the Occupy Wall Street movement with
what?
Bulldozers, batons, and tear gas. The OWS, Occupy Wall Street.
No, I was going to say who did this very same thing.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. administration did this.
Right.
And so that's where the hypocrisy comes in.
Well, but in Occupy Wall Street, though, they were making a critique of capitalism itself, which is a sacred cow, especially on the alleys of Wall Street.
Right, but what, and also things have come out recently that the FBI had plans to kill the leaders of Occupy Wall Street just to get rid of them. Yeah, there's memos from the FBI that have come out that they had plans that how they were going to.
Can you,
they were asked? You said, we just happen to have a plan on the table here. What do you know?
Can you try and find and source and cite some sources for that?
Oh, yeah. That's, I've seen that many times over the last couple of months. But it should be easy to locate.
All right. I would feel more comfortable if you can actually cite a source on that.
Right. So anyway, it's quite hypocritical that, the administration that crushed one protest movement is... disappointed.
Disgusted
with another country who just is trying to crush it. But actually, they're starting to appease them and not. They were supposed to clear the square a couple of days ago. They decided not to, and so, so they may back off on that. But it is quite hypocritical.
But some turmoil in the Ukraine.
Yeah. So let's see. We have a birthday. Hey, it's a birthday.
Whose birthday is it, Dave?
This is the 100th birthday of the Federal Reserve, Bank.
Wait, why are you cheering for that?
Federal Reserve Bank, it's 100 years old, and you only get to be 100 years old once, And so...
I suppose if you're doing it right.
The Federal Reserve Bank was created by an act of Congress during a Christmas recess.
Yeah, in 1913. Yeah.
December 23rd, 1913, when Congress wasn't even in session, they passed the bill.
It's a pretty good trick to do that,
it was quickly signed, I think, by Woodrow Wilson.
Sounds about right.
And created and basically gave away the country's constitutional authority to print its own money. And they gave it for free to a private corporation.
Give it away now.
So now we are $17 trillion in debt to this private institution. That,
And do you want me to sing happy birthday?
If you want to, anyway.
I don't have to, right?
Okay, no, we don't have to. Okay. Anyway, so anyway, Federal Reserve Bank is 100 years old next week, and I hope it's the last one. So, in reality, during all these talks, now we have, just a couple of weeks ago, we had the government slow down the shutdown because of the debt limits. They don't want to increase
debt
the debt
ceiling.
Limit. Debt ceiling. So anyway, so they that's going to come up again here next month because they just kicked the can down the road for a couple of months, and it's going to have to revisited.
I thought that Patty Murray and Paul Ryan just came to some sort of bilateral agreement.
Bipartisan. I haven't heard of that. But anyway, they're going to have to increase the limit, the debt ceiling, at some point because, right, they gave a hiatus. They just said, okay, you just go spend as much money as you want and come January 15th or February 15th, whenever it is, I forget. Then we're going to have, then that deal is off and we'll have to come up with a new debt ceiling. So, you know, we may have another shutdown of government and everything like that. But nobody's talking about the fact that, you know, we shouldn't even be in debt, that all this debt is illegal. We really should just, you know, close the Federal Reserve Bank, take back that authority to print our own money.
Yeah, but have you seen...
And then when you need it, you just print it.
Have you seen the new $100 bill?
No. Has anybody seen it yet?
Yeah, I saw one.
It's out now?
Yeah. They've been out for a couple of years, actually, but it's just slow to make it out here to Hawaii.
They keep,
blue.
They're blue.
They
used to, they delivered, millions of them, and then they had to reject them all because there was some printing error and all this stuff. And so they've been several versions of them over the last several years, but, I haven't seen one yet.
Yeah, they're blue and they have all kinds of security features, a little hologram ribbon that goes through the middle of it. It's actually inside the middle of the bill itself, like a sandwich.
Oh, really?
They have all kinds of micro print on there.
If you think about it, our money is very boring. You know, it's all the same size. It's all the same color.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The new $100 bills are blue.
It's blue all the way across. There's no green on there?
Well, there's green and blue, but it has a blue hue.
A blue hue.
Yeah, it has blue micro print on it that makes it look like it's blue.
Okay. Some countries have a window in theirs, like the Australian currency. You can see through a window in it.
Well, this one's got a watermark in it.
Oh, they always had watermarks. I think when you hold it up to light, you can see that or something like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In general, our bills are pretty boring compared to the rest of the world. I mean, you go to some countries, and you can tell which denomination it is by the size. The fives are smaller than the tens and whatever. So. Ours are all the same.
Ours are standardized, Dave.
Well, and boring.
Yeah.
That was my point.
Yeah, and ugly typically too. But the new money is better looking, I think. I think as the value of the dollar goes down intrinsically, they're begrudgingly making the money slightly more attractive.
Oh, yeah.
To kind of make up for the fact that you can't buy anything with it.
Right, yeah. Well, since the Federal Reserve Bank, back to that story, came into power, the value of a dollar bill.
Can I guess?
Sure.
I guess the value of the dollar bill has gone down by 96%.
So what you used to be able to buy for a nickel, it now costs a dollar.
For 4 cents. 4 cents, five cents.
So it's 95% of its buying power has been lost.
Yeah, liquidated.
Something like that.
Huh.
Well, it was always the policy of the Federal Reserve to build in inflation.
Inflation.
They said, 2-3%. We want to keep it at 2-3%. When it got beyond that, they freaked out. When it got below that, they'd freak out too and make some adjustments. But that means every year, 2-3% of your buying power is gone.
Forever.
And so after 100 years, we're left with only 5% of the value of our dollars. And so that's another drawback to using a private corporation to handle our money supply like that.
Trats. Shucks. I guess you made a mistake.
We did, yeah. And everybody knew it at the time, but, they were powerful. They bought off the right people, I guess, and got it done, but nobody else challenged it either.
Well, if we're going
to... There's never been an audit of the Federal Reserve.
Really?
And Ron Paul tried for years to pass an audit bill. Nobody... We have no idea what goes on behind those doors there.
Huh.
So they're supposedly the largest holder now of U.S. Treasuries, bonds, and stocks.
Even more than the Saudis?
They're printing $80 to $100 billion a year, a month, and buying up securities and stocks and bonds and holding them.
Pretty good business they're in.
Yeah, they just print the money, buy the stuff. Yeah, they're trying to keep the price of these commodities up. But now it's worked out that they're the biggest holder of all these things. And so they're not – it was supposed to be a non-profit organization, but, you know, it's not working out that way.
But the money was too good.
And, you know, how do we know if it's non-profit if we can't audit them, you know? So anyway, 100 years of Federal Reserve is enough.
Well, it's too much. So the Federal Reserve just turned 100, and it seems like, in spite of what you say, it's going strong. On the flip side, we have a death to announce.
A death to announce, okay.
Yeah, and that is of Comet Ison.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, it was coming around the sun, and it got too close to the sun, and it evidently has frizzled up and burned up. So we are not going to see a great big, huge comet show.
Yeah, it was supposed to be one of the best, brightest comets in recent history.
Except the sun ate it. So
burnt it up.
Comet Ison is no more.
Flew too close to the sun.
That's the story.
Who's the Greek mythology?
Icarus.
He had wings of wax.
Yeah.
This comet had wings of wax.
Yeah, and then they got too close to the sun and it melted. It was a snowball, yeah.
Well, they weren't sure at first what it was made of, I guess. Usually there's some ice and water in there.
Sure.
Which doesn't do well. That's what causes a lot of the tail of it, right?
Right, right. It gets molten and sprays out in like a gas and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I watched footage of the comet getting closer to the sun, and as it whipped around, it just kind of, and that was it.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Right.
That was going to be fun looking at it in binoculars.
Oh, well. Okay, phone lines are open, 826-7771. If you have anything to announce, anything to add to the conversation, or if there's a topic that you'd like to talk about. Now, yesterday, this is something that I was hoping to do, was to go to the county council meeting, or not the general meeting, but there was a committee meeting in the, what is it, that basically would impanel the Environmental and Public Health Impact Study.
The EPIS.
For the pesticide and genetic modified organisms of Bill 2491.
Okay.
So 2491 basically said the county will do this. This kind of gives a little more detail on how this will happen.
This is putting some flesh on the bones.
Right, yeah. So it would basically, the way they want to do it, they want to hire a consultant to run the process and then select and panel 12 to 15 scientific experts, medical clinicians, or public health experts, environmental experts, and community stakeholders who are knowledgeable, respected, representative of the community, and willing to commit substantial time and energy to the project.
So, that means a lot of time sitting on chairs in meetings.
Right, yeah. So there, but it's very important, and it was, I think, one of the more important portions of the Bill 2491. But they haven't allocated the money yet, and they haven't fleshed out the details here. But this is what's supposed to do. Now, if anybody was at this committee meeting, it would have been yesterday at 9 o'clock, and can give us information as to whether or not this resolution passed. It still have to go through the primary council. There,
sure, the committee of the whole.
Committee of the whole. But
I love saying that.
It is, yeah, it kind of sounds like they're sitting in a hole. You know,
yeah.
Something like that, you know?
Which metaphorically they are.
In some respects, yeah. So anyway, if anybody has information as to whether or not this resolution passed, or if it
passed through the subcommittee,
passed through the committee, then let us know, because I haven't been able to find nothing on the website, the county council website, or in the newspaper yet about this.
So the telephone number here, in case you've forgotten it or never knew, is 826-7771, and lines are open right now, so feel free to call in with information about this recent action by the subcommittee yesterday.
Right. I've got a GMO story here.
Is it a happy story?
Well, it's just a story. Some people might be happy about it. Anyway, China has just rejected a shipment of 60,000 tons of corn that was found to contain MIR-162, a genetically modified variety of corn that is not approved for import into China.
Huh.
China has orders for 7 million tons of corn from around the world, mostly from the U.S., and accepts 25 other varieties of GMO corn.
But not that one.
But not that one. It was created by Syngenta, but it's also the fifth shipment of corn that was rejected by the Chinese this year. So
now, is this seed corn, or is this corn for eating, or what?
Well, I'm not sure what they're doing with it.
What are they doing that corn in China, Dave?
Well, it's actual corn product. I mean, it's not corn seeds.
It's corn. Okay.
You know, corn flour kernels or whatever.
Okay.
So, you know, it probably a lot of it's going toward use in animal feed. See, one thing China is going on in China right now is they're urbanizing their country. So millions of people. So over the last generation, this is like the largest migration of people in human history.
Sure.
The number of people that from the Chinese countryside into the cities. You know, hundreds of millions of people. Anyway, so now with this new demographic and this new lifestyle, they're eating more meat. And they need more cows and more chickens and
more hogs,
feedlots and all that. So they need more feed corn. And so they're importing 7 million tons. They expect it to go up to maybe 10 million tons here in the next couple of years. And they accept a lot of GMO corn, but they don't like this particular variety. And so it's come back. So this has been a big economic impact around the world where people, you know, the whole shipload of this corn or wheat or whatever shows up, and they test it, and they reject it.
Well, it's got to be a hassle shipping all that corn in a big container ship across the ocean and then shipping it back.
Turning around. Yeah,
sure.
Bringing it back.
And think how the corn must feel. You know, it's like, rejected. Oh, man. I thought we just, you know, we made it halfway across the largest ocean in the world, and now we got to go back again.
Yeah. So I don't know what they do with it now. Just bring it to another country that accepts it, or they wait, bring it back, hope they don't test it or something. I don't know.
Maybe they just dump it at sea.
That's possible.
Then we have ocean corn.
They do that a lot with a lot of, you know, recyclables and like recycled steel and stuff like that. They'll bring it up to a place and they say, we don't want it. They just take it out and dump it because they can't bring it back. So a lot of that stuff sitting in the bottom of the ocean.
Hmm.
Anyway, that's my GMO story of the day.
So it sounds like depending where you are in the GMO spectrum of things, that might be a happy story. Seems like it's kind of sad, though.
Well, you know, it just demonstrates the economic impact that GMOs have when countries won't accept them, you know. And there are, what, probably, I think, 40 to 50 countries in the world that don't accept genetically modified foods, genetically engineered foods. There's a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, you can't call them genetically modified organisms, GMOs. It's not technically correct. It's really they're genetically engineered foods. And I'm not exactly sure of the difference.
It seems like that's just picky to me.
It could be. Could be. But anyway,
by somebody who wants to argue about words.
So 50 countries in the world don't want that stuff. They don't allow it to be grown. They don't allow it to be imported. And so, you know, it's a problem when, you know, one farmer grows it and, you know, say, I'm selling corn, whatever, to Italy. And it shows up and say, oh, no, you got GMO in this corn here. And the farmer may not have done them. I got mixed in with some other product at the feed or the granary
silo,
grain silo, or it might have you know, the genes might have drifted over into their crop.
And, sure, from the pollen drift.
So you know, the farmers in a lot of areas are being hurt by this. You know, it's having an economic impact.
Well, I guess the solution is to create supranational trade agreements that eliminate countries' ability to refuse the GMO crops.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea. Why didn't we think of that before?
Well, they already have thought of that. That's what the Trans-Pacific Partnership is all about.
Probably NAFTA. And
well, it's kind of like NAFTA on steroids.
Right, yeah. Well, it seems like some people are waking up to that because I think next week they were supposed to vote on whether or not to award, what do they call it, fast track authority.
Oh, right, FTA.
So where Congress, they can either vote it up or down, but they can't change any of it.
Sure, they can't look at it.
Well, they can look at it, but they can't change it.
No, they can't look at it while it's being negotiated, though. And
oh, not while it's being negotiated. But
no, and if it weren't
before they vote on it, they have the opportunity to read it. Most of them will not.
Well, they have the opportunity to read, what, like 15,000 pages of documentation?
Yeah, in 24 hours.
Sure.
And then they vote on it. You know?
Sure, sure they do.
And yeah, and then they may change it afterwards anyway. But, they have to vote up or down, yes or no, whether they're going to pass it without the opportunity to make any changes to it whatsoever.
So, right. Did you hear about the recent leak that WikiLeaks did?
Oh, yeah, WikiLeaks. Yeah, I guess on their website there you can find that. But it was the chapter on intellectual property, I believe, which basically said it's all ours and none of it's yours. thing, you know? And so,
Mine.
It's all mine.
Mine.
But it's... that was very enlightening to a lot of people, which, you know, you could expect that from these because we've had many of these, NAFTA and the World Trade Organization.
Sure, WTO.
I mean, there's all kinds of these treaties around already. They just use them for...
It seems like every couple of years goes by.
The next one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It seems like every couple of years go by, the last horrible trade agreement wasn't horrible enough. And so they need a new one to take it into some crazy new frontier.
Well, but it's all being negotiated by corporations.
Right.
I mean, the U.S. trade representatives are there as, you know.
Representatives of the corporation.
But they're there to represent the corporations. The people of these, I mean, we obviously have no input in it because we don't get to see it. We don't get to attend these meetings, you know. And so it's all done by the corporations and for the corporations. And the U.S. government is representing them rather than us. Now, and basically, what these trade agreements say is that all of your resources belong to the corporations, and if somehow you don't make them available to the corporations, then the corporations are at a loss. They can sue you for that economic loss.
Sure.
You know, like a gold mine company could say, go into Indonesia and say, hey, we're going to build a gold mine here, and they say, no, it's a little too sensitive an environmental area. We don't want you to mine gold there. We're going to sue you. We would have made $100 billion on gold on there, so you owe us $100 billion, even if they don't even break ground on the gold mine.
Wow, what a deal.
And so, yeah, it happens all the time. So they sue whenever somebody has they feel like it's their right to access those resources, then when they're not made available to them, they can sue those countries and get that money for free.
Well, that seems reasonable because God had the lack of foresight to put our gold underneath someone else's country.
Yeah, same with the oil. I hope it doesn't pass, but I think the chances of it passing are probably pretty good because we'll never see it until after it's done, even if then. Here's another Nelson Mandela quote.
Oh, okay.
There's nothing like returning to a place that remains unchanged to find the ways in which you yourself have altered. I think he said that when he went to the prison that he was the prison cell that he was held in for 27 years. You go, and the cell is identical to the way it was when he was there, but it looked so much different to him that because he had changed.
I'm nodding my head sagely.
This is radio. You have to say something there.
That's why I'm helping out the listener.
Okay. There's no keener revelation of a society's soul than the way in which it treats its children.
So how'd this guy get so smart?
Well, he had a lot of time sitting in a cell there to think about it, I guess. But a very strong-willed person to begin with, you know. He seemed to be uncorruptible. Which is a good trait. Usually there's a lot of good people around here that somehow do bad things in government because they cannot resist the temptation of the money or the power that they are entrusted with.
Hmm. Well, let's see if this caller can resist the temptation. We've got you pulling up on the line right now. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Oh, thanks, you guys. This is Marge calling. And,
aloha.
I've drawn up some interesting figures from KIUC's financial reports.
Oh, okay.
It takes a long time to find the information that I want to find, but and I actually contacted Carissa Jonas, who is the...
she's the CFO.
CFO.
Yeah, that's the CFO. What does that stand for? Chief Financial Officer.
Yeah, yeah. And David Bissell was in that position before she was hired into that position.
Right. I think they both got, not raises, but they both got promotions.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about David Bissell. His salary last year in 2012, according to the 990 form, which is public information.
And where did you find that?
That's on the website. You go to KIUC, just type in KIUC Co-op, and it comes up, and go to their front page.
Uh-huh.
And on the left side is About Us. It says About Us. Go to that column, and about halfway down it says Financial.
Financial. So you went digging there, and what did you discover?
Okay, so what I discovered is David Bissell's salary last year, and it was raised this year, but we don't know that what that is, was $382,456.
And no cents?
No, I didn't see any.
Well, that's remarkable that his compensation would be an even dollar amount.
Maybe it came out with some sense, but
doesn't make any sense to me. Boom, boom.
And so when I called Carissa Jonas, who's very helpful, by the way, I asked her what was the raise that was given to him this fall. For his ongoing for 2013 on, and she said that was proprietary information, and I would have to apply in writing according to policy number 16 to get that information.
Hmm.
Now, what's interesting is it will be public information when the 990 form is published. But
sure.
Won't be until sometime next year.
So if you want to find out sooner, you got to ask special permission.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to have a very good reason for wanting that information.
What if you tell them that you just can't wait?
Well, it's,
you're so excited
to
know.
It's a base fee plus what's considered or called on the form other compensation and benefits. So it's his total package comes to that. But more interestingly, I did some research on what the cost to us as members has been and will continue to be for Shearwaters. In other words,
sure.
This is, if you haven't researched this lately, this is pretty astounding. For the years 2008, 9, and 10, the legal fees alone were $1,753,165.
Wow, a million here, $750,000 there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money.
Yeah. Then the fines that we had to pay were $40,000. And we had to give a donation to the Habitat Conservation Plan of $225,000.
So all told, that's over $2 million.
That's right. Plus, in the future, $11 million is budgeted to take care of the Habitat Conservation Plan, which KIUC had to write and submit to the federal government.
Let me ask you a question about all that money.
Yeah.
Because that sounds like a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's even more than the $382,000 that you said that the CEO is making.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the cost causer for all that money?
The Shearwaters. No, they're not. They're not the cost causers.
Well, that was in here.
KIUC are the cost causers.
And why does KIUC have to put all this money up for these birds?
Because they were in violation of the federal act that came out in 2007. They had a complaint, apparently. Somebody complained. I don't know whom. But it's in the, if you go to the, that financial column that I told you about, at the top of the page are the years of the audited forms. And in the audited form, category, you'll see all the explanation. Go down to litigation, and under litigation, you'll see the history of the Shearwater things. Although they don't call them Shearwaters, It has to do with migratory birds.
I see. And these are birds that are getting fouled up in KIUC's power lines?
Yes.
Okay.
And they're also dropping to the ground because they're attracted by the very strong, powerful lighting anywhere on the island, and particularly at the sports arenas or the sports fields. And you may remember, and your listeners may remember, that the football games could not be continued.
Sure, the lights at Friday night.
And there was a huge cry out from football fans that they didn't want to go to a game in the daytime because it just didn't seem like the right kind of party atmosphere, I guess, as well as elderly citizens were complaining about having to sit in the sun, the direct sun, during the day, which to me is a valid complaint.
Now, also, KIUC is going to have to spend a lot of money to bury power lines and to take other mitigative actions to protect the sewer waters.
Yes, and that's the additional $11 million.
Right, down in Kailia they're doing that now. They're burying the power lines across Kailia Beach.
Right.
That's a channel that the birds use to navigate out to sea.
Mm-hmm. And something that was interesting, I heard this at a meeting, Mike Iomani gave this report. It was either he or Brad, that they've purchased a radar system now, and they're studying, they're able to tell the flight patterns and times of the flight patterns coming and going of these shearwaters, and they hope from monitoring this for 5 years, they can come up with a really good indication of exactly when these shearwaters go in what direction and for how long. And so that's a good thing. That's a good use of the money, that's for sure. Because
what will that tell them?
We could move the power lines out of their way.
Yeah, move the power lines out of their way.
By burying them along those sections.
And by removing any kind of serious lights that are there, that they're being drawn to. And it's interesting, like, I'm curious whether the county of Kauai has ever been charged anything as a cost causer.
Or I guess in this case it would be a death causer for the birds.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if they've ever been billed for that, as well as we all know that many residents never turn out their overhead lights and on their homes. Bright lights, I have some here in my neighborhood that are on constantly. And are they cost causers?
Now, Marge, another thing that you have mentioned is that the lawsuit against KIUC and the actions against KIUC actually started before we bought the utility. And this is when Citizens United or Citizens, what is it? When they owned it and they passed off that liability to us. And you know, really, that money should have come out of the purchase price because that's a liability. It should have been deducted from the cost of the utility. So that 11 or 7 or 9 million dollars we're talking about should have come right off the purchase price.
Well, the $1,753,165 was paid to two attorneys operations. In the years 2008, 9, and 10. So that was that total for those 3 years that came out of those years. So are you saying this because the shearwaters were a problem when we bought them?
No. The federal government had already put the utility on notice to mitigate impacts to shearwaters before we bought it. They were already, and they failed to do so for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And so then they came back with fines and everything. And so when we bought it, you know, that money was basically already spent. It was a liability to the organization, and we bought the company without deducting that from the purchase price.
Yeah, I think the other problem is that KIC, even though they knew that there was a problem, had been very slow to take action.
Right.
And so I think that's where some of the additional lawsuit and monies come from.
Yeah, that's close to $2 million just in legal fees paid out during those years.
Well, that's a very good deal for whoever the lawyers are.
Yeah. Another interesting fact financially, if you have the time,
sure.
Is I researched what the board members are paid every year, and that's a paying job, by the way, for anyone interested in running for those positions. They don't get paid much, believe me, because I really believe that they are really sincere with the amount of time that they spend doing the research on various items and going to workshops and training sessions. But it's interesting because in 2011, the average per month that each person got, and I just averaged, you know, I added up everybody's fees that they got and divided by nine, and so $18,860 was the average per year put out, average per person.
So you're saying each of the directors made on average $18K a year?
Yeah, and that comes out to over 12 months to a little over $1,500 per month.
Well, that's not a tremendous amount of money.
No, it's not. And it was actually more in 2011 by about $200 or something like that.
Well, that doesn't seem like that's that big of a deal to me. I think they should be compensated something.
Right.
And that doesn't seem like it's an outrageous amount.
I think that the board is you know, most of the board members are doing a really good job in you know, getting the facts and doing research, although sometimes I wonder about that with some of the things that they say. But one good thing, the rental on our big place of business right
there. Taj Mahal.
Yeah, the big Taj Mahal actually has gone down.
And what is it now?
It's now $89,750.
As opposed to $90,000.
90-something thousand. And so I asked that question to Carissa this morning, and she said that is because it's in the lease agreement. When the fair market value of the building goes down over the years or goes up, that creates the rental fee. So, and it's supposedly going down for 2014, 2015.
So is that just like depreciation on the building?
Yes, depreciation on the building as well as the
property values are going down.
Property value going down.
It's still $1 million a year though.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So that's a reasonable chunk of change.
And it's supposed to go down in 2016 and 17, but only by about $57,000. Yeah.
Now when
per year. Yeah.
When is the lease up? It was a 20-year lease.
Yeah, it's up in 2020.
2020. Okay.
And then. Then they've got the power to renew the lease for another 25 years, and or in the year 2025 make an offer on the building to buy.
Well, they could also build their own building.
Well, that's what I've been
or rent after. A smaller space.
That's
or,
what I've been
you know, a cheaper space.
Or trying to promote.
Right.
Well, after 20 years goes by at $1 million a pop, here, hold on a second, let me do the math.
Yeah.
That's $20 million.
And that building is probably worth about $10
million.
So we've bought it twice, and we still don't even own it. Or we'll have bought it twice, but we still don't even own it.
So,
we have no equity whatsoever in that thing.
Yeah, that's not very funny, though, Marge. Why are you laughing?
Well, I'm being facetious. I mean, it's just... as much as we try to intervene with these kinds of things with the current board, and I found it interesting that one of the testifiers at, was it Monday's meeting?
Yeah.
Said you seem to just sort of not paying attention to us and have a disgusted look on your face. And I know one of the staff have just caused us, you know, in a board meeting, he, you know, referred to anyone who had any negative remarks about smart meters as just total troublemakers and that we had no value, basically.
Well, that's not very nice to say.
No, it wasn't very nice to say, and I have a direct quote on that in my notes, so, and that I'm what I just said might not be the direct quote, but that's what he was saying.
Right.
So anyway.
Okay, Marge, well, thank you very much for your analysis of the financial situation at KIUC.
Well, it's part of it anyway. So we got to continue.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks for your program, guys.
All right. Aloha. Okay, well, it is 5 o'clock, and I need to tell you that you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio, and also something about our Oahu transmitter, K284AL Haleiwa, which actually isn't in Haleiwa.
But it is on Oahu.
It's on Oahu, yeah. That's another one of our call letters there. But also, it's 5 o'clock. You're listening to Out of the Box with Dave Giroux and Jonathan Jay. And
he's
got,
Dave Giroux, and I'm Jonathan
Jay. We've got an hour left in the show, and this show is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with these following wonderful underwriters. Check these out.
Julio's Beach Burritos, ready-to-roll breakfast burritos with bacon, chorizo, eggs, potatoes, and machaca. Between mile marker 21 and 22 off of Wailapa Road in Kilauea. Now open at 7 a.m. Tuesday through Friday. Julio's Beach Burritos.
Yee Corp and Associates, providing personalized employee benefits and insurance solutions since 1988. A green company in an orange building, 808-245-5384, on the web at yeecorp.com.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply, in Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
What now? Who is this singing the song, Dave?
This is the new Riders of the Purple Sage, who are on Kauai right now. We'll be playing a concert tonight at the Aston Aloha Beach Hotel, Kuhio Lounge, at 7 o'clock. Door opens 7 o'clock. Show starts at 8 o'clock. So that's this evening, the new Riders of the Purple Sage, featuring original members David Nelson and Buddy Cage, with Michael Ranky. That is hard to read the font on this thing anyway. But anyway, New Riders of the Purple Sage. This is their Panama Red, their famous songs. Okay.
Got another caller here calling in. Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Thank you. Is this Jonathan?
This is. I'm Jonathan Jay, and he's Dave Giroux.
Hi, Dave Giroux. I'm Karen Baldwin.
Aloha, Karen. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. I want to talk a little bit more about what Marge had to say and maybe clarify some of the issues that she raised.
Sure. Before you do, let me introduce you as one of the 9 directors of KIUC, directors of the board.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for calling in.
Sure. One of the first things that Marge talked about was David Bissell's salary. And I don't know that she drew a conclusion, but, you know, that sounds like a big number and so on. And I think it's important.
It kind of does.
Yeah, it kind of does. I don't make that much. How much do you make, Jonathan?
I don't make that much.
I don't either.
I don't even make $300,000 less than that.
Yeah, okay. Me either. In any event, I think that it's important that we all realize that what we're paying David Bissell for is performance. And what he has done, along with his staff and developing his staff and so on, is bring on green energy as a biomass, you know, let's get off fossil fuel. We have a big PV project at Port Allen that's finished.
That's A and B is at Port Allen, but we've got 2 12-megawatt facilities that are scheduled to come online in the next 2 years.
Right. We've got one coming out, not in the next 2 years. Next September we put in an 80-acre PV site. And when we talk about things like, the rent is going down, that's because we have people at KIUC who are negotiating these contracts that take note of that and peg rent to depreciation and so on. So we're not paying more than we should be. And we have analyzed, and when I say we this issue is raised repeatedly. We have looked at what it would cost to build a new building, and it is more expensive than staying in our current building with our option to purchase. You know, I appreciate people raising these sorts of issues, and we've looked at it, and that's the outcome.
Oh, so it's decided. Then no further discussion necessary on it, right?
Well, you know, we can talk about it today, and we can talk about it tomorrow, we can talk about it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know, it's a financial analysis, right?
Well, you know.
Presumably. I mean, if we have to believe what you said, but you didn't give us much detail on it. You just said you looked at it and it's more expensive, and that's it. So
looked at building our own building, KIUC purchasing land, building your own building, versus staying where we are now.
Okay.
That was the analysis. In any event, I don't want to take up other people's time. That's okay. But one of the, just close to my heart project. Marge talked about the Habitat Conservation Plan, and I could hear in her voice, and I'm sure most of your listeners agree, you know, we are so blessed on Kauai to have birds.
Sure, they've been here longer than anyone else has.
And none of the other islands have them, you know, so none of the other islands can put in wind farms. We can't because we still have our birds. And it is not the straightforward process that you might think it is to negotiate with the federal government and its various branches to figure out what it is they want us to do to mitigate the fact that we kill some birds. And it's a long process. And I know attorney's fees sound huge, but it is a long process. And the county has begun that process. The big hotels have begun that process. KIUC shouldn't be faulted for what it's done. There isn't a book on how to make a habitat conservation plan that the federal government will like. So just my two cents worth, and thanks for letting me chat with you guys.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. I hope that we can make that more a regular feature in the future.
Thank you. I'm flattered.
All right. Well, everyone, that was Karen Baldwin. She's one of the 9 directors on the board of directors at KIUC, and we're very fortunate that she was able to call in and share with us some of her perspective on the issues that Marge was raising moments ago.
Yeah, I'd like to get into more detail on that at some point, but it's not intuitive that that it would be cheaper, that this is the best alternative. I mean, I know for a fact that there are cheaper properties out there. This is one of the nicest buildings on the island.
And I think it is one of the most expensive rent square foot on the island.
Right. So to say that we can't do any better than that is disingenuous, I think.
Well, it may not be disingenuous. It show us the numbers. That would be the way to say it.
I'd like to see the analysis. We do have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, that one got away. Please call back, 826-7771. Phone lines are open.
Okay, and then also, if you're on Oahu, if you're listening to us on our transmitter on Oahu, we have a toll-free line you can call in and join this conversation. I'd love to hear. We've never had a call from Oahu on this show that I know of. The number is 866-275-1112. Now, talking about KIUC, Jonathan, you are involved in an issue with the utility. Evidently, you weren't happy with their decision to charge a fee to those peoples who opted not to get a smart meter.
Yeah, it seemed unfair to me.
What did you do about it?
Well, I wasn't the only person that it seemed unfair to, because as I went around knocking on doors and asking people what they thought about it, over 400 of them, over 500, excuse me, signed a petition saying they thought it was unfair too. And so we got more than twice the number of folks that was necessary for minimum to have the issue called up again. The board passed a resolution about these fees, and when 250 or more members say, hey, wait a second, that's not such a great idea, then the decision gets taken out of the hands of the board and goes into the full membership. And so we're going to have an election now to revisit these fees and determine if they are, in fact, going to be KIUC policy or not.
So has the wording of this petition or of this ballot initiative been determined?
Well, we're working on it.
Who's working on it?
Well, right now, KIEC is working on it. I met with Karen Baldwin and Judge Murashiga and Carol Bain a few weeks ago, along with Adam Asquith and Douglas Wilmore. And the six of us sat in a room, and we kind of hammered out what we thought was a good compromise for the ballot language. And then last Monday night, that language was presented to the community, and the community gave their feedback on that. So what a lot of people seem to think was that there should be more information inside the ballot language describing what the fees were. There's a $10 and 27 cents a month monthly fee. There's a $50 and some odd cents one-time swap-out setup fee for residential accounts, and then there's a $138 fee for businesses if they want to get rid of their smart meter. And so those three fees are going to be up for review by the membership, and we're going to put it to the whole members of the co-op, and people will say yes or no whether they support the new fees or not.
Right. Well, there wasn't a caller there, but they didn't wait. Okay, so have they done an analysis of what the true costs are of this, of reading the meters on this 10% of their people that...
No, the answer is no.
So where do they come up with the $10 a month?
Well, those are projected costs. And it's really important to recognize that they're not actual costs, they're projected costs. And even more important than that is for folks to understand that of the different options that they had for how they're going to figure out how to read these meters, KIC management chose to go with the most expensive option, and that is to have the meters read every month, which is totally unnecessary because there are hundreds and hundreds of utilities across the land that measure the meters once every several months and then average
they estimate it and then average up when they get around to going out.
Sure, and if they overpay, then that gets corrected. If they underpay, then that gets corrected. People can send in their own measurements on their utility, go out and read the meter themselves and send it in, or they can just average it, which is the simplest thing to do because that doesn't involve anybody doing anything.
Right, yeah.
But KIC wasn't interested in doing that. And it seems like whenever it comes to spending the members' money, KIEC management is happy to do that.
Right. We have a couple of calls here. Let's go to the phones.
Aloha caller, you're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Hi there. I'm a little bit miffed that we're all paying for this, I think it's $63,000 election. Well, I kind of feel like the people that wanted this vote should foot the bill for that, just as they should foot the bill for opting out and having their meters read.
Well, I agree with you that I'm also a little upset about the cost of the special election, because there's no reason why this issue couldn't be handled as a referendum on the upcoming annual election. Again, when KIEC looked at how they were going to respond to the petition, they chose the most expensive option, and I don't really understand why they did that.
Well, you also have to realize that these charges came from the PUC.
That's not true. The charges did not come from the PUC. The charges came from KIUC. PUC reviewed those costs.
The PUC set the costs.
That's not accurate.
Well, that was my understanding. I can double-check that.
Yeah, no, the costs come from projections made by KIUC about what they estimated their costs are going to be. And some of the directors on the board said, hey, let's not have these cost projections. Let's just actually run it, and then we can look at what the actual budget is, and then we won't have a debate about whether these costs are accurate or not. We can run it for a year and then see how much it costs. But KIEC was in a hurry to get the costs in place, so they went ahead and just did that anyway and used projections.
Caller, now, there were costs involved in getting the smart meters in the first place. I mean, the utility spent $11 million to bring those on island. And so people that did not get smart meters perhaps should not incur that cost. Maybe if there's a savings to the utility by not having these smart meters.
Well, the savings that's going to come is later on down the road. We're kind of in the 21st century now, and it's going to be able to – these smart meters are going to enable utilities – to see what usage is needed at what point in time, whether to put a diesel engine on or turn it off and let the solar do it or whatever. And it is going to be a savings in time. Secondly, as I'm sure you all know, it wasn't the current board nor the current CEO that got this going, the smart meters. I'm not sure if I know.
I think it was.
I think, yeah, this is
only
a couple of years ago this happened.
I can't remember the former CEO's name.
Randall He.
Yes, he's the one that started out with the smart meters. David Dissel came on with this issue already in place. Well, and I'm not saying that I don't agree with the smart meters, because I do. You know, I think it really is bringing us into the 21st century.
Well, one of the things I think it's really important for people to understand about the meter reading fees is that back in the day, before anyone had a smart meter on Kauai, the meter reading fees were taken care of in our electrical rates. And our electrical rates have not changed. So we're still paying for all the meters to be read, but there's 27,000 less of them. So why should we be paying more for less? That doesn't make any sense. We're already all paying for those meters to be read.
It makes sense for the people that are going to have the meters physically read to pay that cost.
But what I'm saying...
For the rest of us to be footing that bill.
What I'm saying is we're already paying for those meters to be read, and we have been paying all along. Did you ever receive a discount in your electric bill? After your smart meter was installed?
I don't even know if they're reading those online now or if they're still coming around. I don't know what's in place at this point regarding that. But
so you haven't received a discount in your electric bill?
I don't know. I haven't ever looked. But you made me forget my next thought.
Well, I talked to a friend of mine who's living in kind of a rural area, and they've deemed his area to be more expensive to read because there's only a small number of meters on his street. He pays $25 a month to have his meter read. And that fee is still on there even though he's got a smart meter now. So he's still paying $25 a month to read his meter even though they don't read his meter.
Is that here on Kauai?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
I will say that does not make sense.
That doesn't. I agree with you, caller.
Anyway, I was just on my work break, and I got to get back to work, so thank you.
All right, well, thank you for calling in. Really appreciate that.
All righty.
And we've got another caller who's been waiting patiently. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Aloha.
I have a question regarding the monitoring of the electromagnetic radiation within my living space. I called Jim Kelly. And he said...
And he's the communications outreach person for KIUC.
Yeah, and I asked him, do you have a service that, you know, you could come out and the guy could give me a reading? And he said, well, they tried it once or whenever, and they had a bad experience, and then so they no longer do this. And then he rudely hung up on me. But I was wondering if you...
How does one hang up rudely as opposed to hanging up politely?
Well, loudly. Like slamming the phone down.
Huh, that's kind of odd.
Well,
or you say, I'm going to hang up on you. That's a little nicer, isn't it?
I guess so.
Some
advance warning.
I mean, I didn't expect a great aloha from this gentleman. But anyway...
Kelly's a pretty nice guy. Catch him on a good day.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I've had several pleasant conversations with Jim Kelly, and we even had him up into the studio here at KKCR, and he represented himself very well.
Well, I'll take you for your word, okay?
But go ahead, caller.
The main point I'm trying to get at is, do you gentlemen know of anybody who I could hire or get to come out to my living space so I could monitor exactly the level of electromagnetic radiation in my place?
You know, one person who is knowledgeable about that is Felicia Cowden. She does the Soapbox show on Tuesdays.
Yeah, I called her. I called her. She gave me a reference on air. I went to that website, and that really wasn't the very best reference. There's a better reference. I went to. I wrote it down someplace. I went through Island Breath,
uh-huh.
And I typed in those kind of. Phrases like electromagnetic radiation monitoring, and I came with some organization that had a really. Then when I went the other day, I couldn't seem to find it. Maybe I typed in a different term in their search box, but I think I found someone through another gentleman who you guys are familiar with. I won't mention his name, but anyway, so I'm going to have to pay my own money just to see and maybe I can have my friends, when the person comes out, and share the cost of having this person come out. And then, because some of these people in our apartment complex, they have like 6 meters on the side of their building where they're living.
Yeah, that seems like that's starting to get a little much.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, so I just want to cut to the chase and see exactly, because I, you know, my computer dies, so now I go to the library and use there, so I don't have a router, and I try to live as low-tech as possible for economic reasons. And I'm even going to disconnect my answering kind of like machine and put my old kind telephone on, even though it's less convenient, because I am concerned about this, because all the research I've done seems like the real point of concern is inflammation. And when they show the change in blood chemistry for those exposed to electromagnetic radiation, it's really very, very disconcerting.
Mm. Well, I don't know if these are the best people in the world to check your levels out at your home, but if you go to a website called planetoasis.org.
That's the one I went to.
Uh-huh.
I really found that there was no connection there for someone to come out and monitor.
Well, I would send them an email and explain your situation, and Tor is one of the gentlemen there. He may be able to help you out.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you for calling in.
Have you guys discussed the latest federal budget situation?
No.
You know, I mean, how they've decided to handle our economy?
No. Why don't you give us an update on that?
Well, I was watching the blurb last night on PBS, and it seems like they've agreed. But the thing that just kills me about this whole quantitative easing thing is,
I love that name.
Yeah, every year for the last several years, Dr. Bernanke has been spending $1.2 trillion to buy all these junk rated loans. I mean, that's like bad loans for student loans, bad loans for like trailer parks in Florida or whatever, just all kinds of just like ridiculous. I mean, so we're buying our own debt, okay? So we're buying our own debt, and that just increases every month our indebtedness to ourselves by $1.2 trillion. I mean, eventually it's going to get to the point where the national debt is going to be so high that just the interest rates, and then once interest rates go beyond, I mean, for you and me, when we want to borrow something, and I don't borrow any money these days, but if we, you know, those are fellow consumers who do, so they have to spend, what, 18% interest, whereas...
Oh, like for your credit card or something?
Yeah, the big boys, they get the money for practically free. I mean, the big banks and all the big cheeseburgers or tofu burgers, and so... The thing that kills me is, I mean, eventually, when interest rates do start to climb way back up, I mean, the national debt is going to gazoom, right?
Sure, it'll explode.
So, you know, I just find it, I mean, yes, I understand that when Dr. Bernanke studied the Great Depression of the 30s, he saw there was a lack of liquidity. But, I mean, there's a difference between, like, you know, borrowing some money to borrow, you know, to buy, like, a washing machine for your house, or like under FDR, you know, like I know an old Filipino man, and he actually built the facilities in the 30s up at Kokee, okay, under the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Sure.
So, I mean, I just think Mr. Obama has really squandered all this money. He could have spent it wisely, and the Congress, you know, to, like, invest. They could have rebuilt the roads and the infrastructure, things that are, like, real. And
oh, like making tangible investments in our society.
Yeah, and I think Mr. Obama is a tremendous, and under him, unfortunately, the very, very, the top 1%, they've even gotten more 1%. They've even got richer. So I just, and the thing, you know, about Hawaii, it's like Hawaii was growing at 5% a year until Gulf War I. And then since that point, Hawaii has not been growing at 5% a year, so there's less jobs. And then, you know, it's like when I tell people in the mainland, you know, oh yeah, you know, some people work two or three jobs. I only had to work two at once in my working life, you know, and I said, oh, they say that's not right. I said, well, yeah, it's right. It is right. And so, but I just, I'm just concerned about the total ball game, guys, you know, and like, I just don't trust our, you know, our president. I don't trust our governor.
How about our Federal Reserve? Do you want to sing Happy Birthday to the Federal Reserve with us?
No, I'd rather not.
We can't find anybody to do that with us.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we have another call coming in.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you, caller.
Bye.
Thank you, caller. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box with Dave Giroux and Jonathan Jay. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you? I have a friend who has a EMF meter, and I was playing with it just for the previous caller. The smart meters will pop a burst in energy about every 10 seconds. So there, what it came across as is if there was just an emission, they're sending information somewhere.
Sure, each of the meters chatter with the other meters in the neighborhood. Like, what are you gonna wear tomorrow, meter? I was thinking of wearing my pink blouse. How about you on the other side of the street, meter? What are you gonna wear tomorrow?
I don't have the receptor to. I didn't have the translation. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I was wondering
what
they were saying.
I don't really know what they're actually chattering about.
But the amount of energy it was sending was nothing compared to your laptop or cell phones, and it was real. It's constant. But the real things are the wireless devices you have in the house. So
well, who pays for the electricity to for the meter to operate? Is it before the meter or after the meter? So are we paying for all that communication, or is KIUC paying for it?
Yeah, so I would assume
it's on our bill.
Yeah,
I would assume so, because most people I know that have the smart meters, their bills have gone up.
I'm sorry, what was that, caller?
They're built. I don't know anyone personally that had a smart meter installed and where their electric bills went down.
Hmm, interesting.
Most of the people that I've discussed it with, their bills went up. So I've got to presume, who knows, maybe it's built into the electronics.
Well, I guess
it itself is electronic.
Well, it's a device, and it's on, and it's, you know, broadcasting frequently, and so that energy has to come from somewhere, and someone's got to pay for the electricity, and it's each person who has one of them on the side of their house. It's like a little electronic appliance that's on 24/7.
Yeah, the thing that concerned me when I was playing with it is the constant chatter that it had. It was a regular boom, pulse goes up, boom, pulse goes up. So that has a lot of potential implications. If they're every 10 seconds they're sending information, who knows how they're built. Some of it is probably just sending electronic data, but who knows?
I'm sure that's the bulk of it, is that they're communicating to send your electric usage and your neighbor's electric usage back to KIUC.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that these devices give the utility any more information than they already had, or that any more than they need, because you know they already had sensors at every substation, at every transformer. They knew exactly how much electricity was going online on a moment-to-moment basis without knowing house to house.
Well, the smart meters only send back information to KIC every 4 to 6 hours. So
no. We're finding that it's every 10 seconds now. It's not every four hours.
They're chattering constantly.
Well,
but they know
for a fact that they're not sending information regarding the usage at the location.
Well, it what they do is the different meters themselves create a mesh network where they're talking to each other and taking the data from your neighborhood and sending it back to KIUC. But what I'm saying is they only get information about an individual household every 4 to 6 hours, and it comes 4 to 6 hours after the fact.
So then they're not able to make
moment-to-moment
decisions.
It's not a real-time kind of a
thing.
Right,
so then it's not working the way that they tell us it's working or that it needs to work. Because they're saying we're making decisions on whether to start up a new generator.
Yeah, that's not true.
That's what Karen Baldwin just said just a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, but it's not true.
Well, then she's on the board, and she's not. She doesn't know what's going on, or is she misleading us somehow? You know, but she—that's what she said.
I think that was maybe the other caller who didn't identify herself.
Okay, maybe it was them. But if they're not doing that, then what are they doing? Why do we have them?
Well,
I don't see the point.
They're in preparation to give time of use rates for KIUC.
Well, why didn't they say that up front? Because
I don't know. I'm not in charge.
That's a decision that's information that we need to make a decision, and it's our co-op. So if they had ulterior motives in the long run, they should have disclosed that to us, the owners of the corporation, of the utility.
Go ahead.
Another thing to consider, though, is you're talking about what KIUC would do with that. But any wireless device that transmits a signal has to be received. And then it's retransmitted. And that's the way, that's the practicality of the world we live in today with all the wireless communication. But when there's a direct communication, you would have to tap into a wire. But the reality is every electronic communication goes somewhere. So whoever has the electronic ability could take that information and utilize that and set up a parallel receiver.
So you're talking about kind of a lack of security on the system,
right? But that's the practicality with everything, including cell phones. If I'm communicating via cell phone, it goes to the cell tower and it's transmitted from cell tower to cell tower. You can set up a parallel port and pick up that information. So the one thing that you're talking about is with KIUC is what they're doing with it. But I think that whether it's realistic or not, there's a group of people that are saying, but the fact that it goes somewhere and then that controls electric usage or you can monitor it, but you also can take control of it. That becomes a reality with any wireless transmission.
Right, and there's a new generation of electric appliances that are coming out. So like smart refrigerators, smart ovens, stoves,
smart
dryers,
TVs, smart stereos.
And so if the utility decides, oh, we have too much usage right now, let's shut off the refrigerators in this area or that area. I mean,
where are the products manufactured? They're not manufactured domestically. They're manufactured. A lot of the meters are manufactured in China.
So that's where most of the manufacturing in the world is.
If you were a conspiracy person, or you thought it could possibly, and I think this is a secondary concern. Some people would say, well, if a foreign government is making the meters, they certainly could put some electronic device in there that you would be able to tap into, or at least know the code to tap in, to be able to shut down or increase or run machinery at maybe instead of 12,000 RPMs, they run it at 12,500.
And what would that do, caller?
Well, I know that there have been nuclear reactors that they were the centrifuges were spinning at a wrong rate, and someone hacked into the computer that was controlling it.
Oh, that was actually the U.S. that hacked into the Iranian centrifuges.
So to try to get it to with the presumption that was going to create a meltdown. So I don't know. I'm not sophisticated enough in electronics to know what they're doing, but that's sort of the chatter. The meters have their own chatter, and then the humans have their own chatter about what the meters are chattering about.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in with that perspective, caller. We've got another caller standing by.
Tell the previous listener that the amount it's sending off is it's inconsequential compared to other stuff you use in your house. So the amount of the energy it's sending off is not much, but it is constant.
All right. Well, thank you, caller.
Thanks. Bye.
Aloha. And we've got another caller who's been waiting patiently by. Aloha, caller, are you there?
Hi. Yeah, I have a couple of comments about the smart meters. First of all, your old meter was draining electricity always. It turns the wheel, turns those little dials constantly. That's a drain of electricity.
I think that it's a passive mechanical process.
But the just the turning the wheels on that meter draws electricity.
I don't believe so.
I mean, something's moving. The laws of, you know, mechanics require energy to move anything. It's not moving through gravity. It's spinning. So that's energy that's causing that arm, that wheel to go around and around.
You must, I mean, you must be right about that, but it wasn't broadcasting anything. And I think it's just the flow of the flow of current through the device.
And
well,
also,
well, that's because it's not 100% efficient. I think you're right
and
about
it's,
that.
It's funny, the same people who would say this energy is hurting them are the same people that would run a Champion juicer that puts off a huge electromagnetic field and poisons their fruits with electromagnetic radiation, but they are afraid of a smart meter. And, you know, if you're a conspiracy person, you think they're coming to your house, you have to have an elevated sense of self-worth to think that you're worth somebody going, sending an investigator and somebody sabotaging you. I mean, that sense, that's an exaggerated sense of self-purpose to think that you're worth that. So, I mean, here we are on this little island, and you think that some foreign government's going to come over here and tap into your home so they can cut off your fridge. Oh, big attack, you know. You're so worth it.
Huh.
So I think it's a little bit of just fear-mongering and denial among those people who are afraid of it. And I think the people who don't want the smart meters should pay to have the guy come out, and they should pay a lot for it.
And how much do you think they should pay? How much more?
$10 a month.
How much more do you think they should pay than they're already paying?
For the meter reader.
Well, what if an economic analysis showed that those people cost the utility less than the smart meters themselves? Would you give them a refund?
Sure. If you could do an accurate study and prove that, then you could balance it out that way and make an economical, fair decision. That would be simple.
Right, yeah. It costs $11 million to buy and install those smart meters in the first place. So it's $11 million already that wasn't paid, you know, beforehand. I mean, we bought the original.
How much is that going to save in gas, the meter reader running around to every house every month?
Not $11 million, not in the...
It might over the course of a few years.
Not over the course of the life of the meter.
How much is his salary, insurance, benefit package, truck, gas? Think about that. I mean,
it seems like it's about $100,000 a year.
All right. So, I mean, you could debate this and look at
the
different
years.
Things. But the other point, too, that I wanted to make is I really can't understand why we're still paying the highest rates in the country, and we're paying a guy, a CEO, that nobody's ever been able to tell me what he does, like $300,000 a year.
$382,456.
Can you tell me what he does to earn that?
He got a raise.
What does he do to earn it?
You know, I have no idea.
Job? What does he do?
I have no idea. I can't speak on behalf of our CEO.
Nobody's ever been able to tell me. So you got this guy who's called a CEO. He's supposed to be in charge. We're paying him almost $400,000 a year. And nobody can tell us what he does, except for sitting in office and wave his magic wand and make things happen.
Well, I would invite
it's really
you.
Ridiculous because we have the highest rate in the world. And my suggestion a few years ago when they brought this person on was, hey, lower his salary about three times, you know, give him maybe $100,000. And then as our rates go down, percentage-wise, his salary can start climbing back up. Then he's not sitting back in his rich mansion, not feeling compassion for the poor people who are struggling.
I like that idea.
Because if you're making that kind of money, how can you feel empathy for the poor person who can't make their bill every month?
Yeah, I like that idea where you tie it to the utility rates rather than they say they gave him a raise because he's increased the amount of renewable energy,
which is a good thing.
Yeah, how much?
Yeah,
I mean,
which is
how
a good thing. But
at
what cost?
That. There's companies that went out and put in solar panels. I mean, how much of our renewal is actually coming from them?
Well, the answer to that question, caller, is there's two 12 megawatt facilities, solar farms, that are, one's being built right now, and one is intended to go in Anahola if they can work out.
At this point, they haven't done anything.
Well,
I mean, nothing is working right now.
It's not up and running yet. But things do take time, so you can't just wave a magic wand and have it happen automatically.
Well, I mean, it's like 10, 12 years we've been talking about it. He's been getting his $300,000 to $400,000 a year, and now we're just now getting our first solar installation 10, 12 years later. I mean, everybody uses this excuse, everything takes a lot of time. But that's a lot of BS because people mainly, you know, are incompetent. And
well,
we don't know that this guy has any competence at all.
I would ask you to remain respectful in the comments that you make about people.
Very good. Hey, one more quick thing. Is that all you're talking about tonight? Is just KIUC, or is it open forum for anything?
It's open for anything.
If you want to talk about monster trucks, we'll give you.
Hey, I didn't bring that up.
We have another call right behind you, so if you want to change.
No, I just want to make another comment that I think people would be interested. It's on another subject.
Okay, if you could.
It'll be quick.
Okay, do it quickly, please.
Yeah, sure. I wonder, you know, especially people who are genetic modified food opponents might be interested to know. Every time you go to a Starbucks store and get a cup of coffee in their paper cups, those cups are coated with a low-density polyethylene polymer that's sprayed on when these cups are being made.
Sure, that's so they don't leak, right?
Well, and that's all your coffee ever touches. It doesn't touch the paper. It touches polyethylene polymer.
And where does that polyethylene polymer come from?
It's a liquid petrochemical that's made by petrochemical companies, and as a cup is being produced, and the bottom, it's all sealed with the same petrochemical and the same process, and then the lining is sprayed on liquid. But when you call Starbucks, they'll tell you that's true, but they won't tell you how much of it you're consuming, how much of it leaches into your coffee.
Does it leach into the coffee?
That leaches into the coffee as it's sitting there, or how the compounds in the coffee mix with the polyethylene polymer, or if it's safe, how they proved it's safe for pregnant women, or not that children drink a lot of coffee, but they go in there and get hot chocolate.
Sure.
So you're going in there, and all they say is trust us when you tell them that. And it's like when you ask them, when you call up their health line, you find out, well, they haven't never told people this, and it took a lot of research to actually find it out. But it is on their website, and they will tell you in their call center if you ask them directly, they'll look it up and tell you, yeah, it's true. And they just say, trust us. But my sense is you're probably consuming a whole lot of petrochemicals every time you use one of these paper cups that's lined with this polyethylene polymer.
Well, it's disposable.
And no studies have been done to show it's safe.
It's a disposable cup. I think you're better off drinking your coffee out of a ceramic cup, like a mug that you don't throw away every time.
Preservation, but what about all the rest of people who are ignorant that are being maybe poisoned long term by Starbucks? You know, so
maybe that's why they're ignorant.
They trust us.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, then, for the call.
Aloha, caller. Thank you for waiting patiently. You're on Out of the Box with Dave Giroux and Jonathan Jay. We've been talking a little bit about KIUC, but the floor is open if you want to talk about something else.
You know, when on Democracy Now!, I was reminded, because they mourned Nelson Mandela in South Africa this week.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of the past. I'm 62, and I remember it, but I'm glad they reminded me of it, because our foreign policy disparity with Cuba is such a shame, the way the United States will not make amends and try to recoup with Cuba. And they're constantly, you know, the United States is the bully of the world. We do such terrible stuff. We go to other people's country and we torture people. We create all this murder and mayhem.
Well, that's just because we're the biggest superpower in the world. If we weren't the biggest superpower, someone else would be number one.
Yeah, exactly, right? It was a reminder of that when apartheid was happening, which was totally backed by the United States, and during the Reagan administration, Dick Cheney, the United States offered intelligence to help, you know, find Nelson Mandela and put him in jail. And
well, it's because he was considered to be a terrorist at the time.
Yeah, they put him on the terrorist list, and Dick Cheney did everything in his, everything possible to keep him on that terrorist list and keep him in jail, right?
Yeah, but that says a lot more about Dick Cheney than it says about Nelson Mandela.
Exactly, you know, when this apartheid movement was, when Nelson Mandela was in jail, they said it today on the news, and that in Angola, there was all these factions, these military groups, and that were funded by, it was the South African White Army with some other people that were, you know, funded, supported by, backed by United States. And there's the Cuban government under Castro sent 36,000 troops.
sure.
to Angola.
Sure.
And I'd totally forgotten about this point in history, right?
Yeah, well, isn't that, that's Biafra, yeah?
No, Biafra was where people starved to death. That was, you know, pictures of starving Africans on National Geographic and stuff.
Okay.
Biafra was where people starved to death, and it gave American kids like me, you know, I'm 62, you know, our first look at, like, third world, look what's happening, people starving, you know.
Okay, my mistake.
This was in Angola, right? And so the apartheid, they were trying desperately to stop black power, so to speak. And if not for Fidel Castro sending 36,000 troops over there, Cubans, you're willing to fight for South Africa for freedom, for black freedom, because they beat the South African army the way it said it on the news. They pushed them back out of Angola, back into Namibia, right? And the way it gave the South African, the black South African people, such this wonderful moral victory, you know, a feeling like, wow, you know, we can win this battle, you know. And besides that, Cuba trained doctors and all sorts of people to go help South Africans. When Nelson Mandela, when he first got out of prison back in the 1990, something like that, I forget, right? You know, one of his first trips out of the country, he went to Cuba, and he personally thanked Castro, you know, and said, hey, when are you going to come to my country, to Africa? You know, I want you to come. You know, you were about the only person who's ever come to Africa who didn't want to take anything, but you wanted to give us something and help us. And I thought it was very powerful and wonderful, you know, because our public relations with Cuba is so God, when you look at it on a map, it's so close to Florida.
Yeah, it's like 90 miles off the shore, yeah.
And even though I'm agreeing with you about how bad President Obama is, or whoever calls the shots, but he shook the hand of Fidel Castro's brother.
Yeah, Raul.
And so there's a big stir. All the Republicans got all pissed off. And this one senator, this woman senator from Florida, could talk to John Kerry, who tried to figure out John Kerry. You know what I mean? He's a sketchy character, too. I don't know what John Kerry's trip is either, right?
But he's got a good head of hair, though, you have to admit. But,
yeah, I mean, he's an anti-Vietnam War, anti-Vietnam, but then he wants to go fight and drop bombs on Syria. I don't completely understand the guy. But
well, his position has evolved over the decades.
Exactly, you know, but, you know, maybe he was a plant, who knows. But the thing is that this lady just in Congress or in a Capitol Hill in Washington gave this scathing, like, remarks, like, chastising Obama. Why did Obama shake the hands of Castro's brother, you know, when they're at this, funeral ceremony in South Africa?
Because it's a polite way to greet people, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Obama couldn't help it, you know. I mean, he just, you know, hey, here you go. Here's my hand, you know.
I heard his mama raised him right to be polite to one another.
Exactly. And it's a funeral. We're not here to discuss politics, you know. And so he, this woman from Florida is talking to Kerry and saying, you know, how could you shake the hand of somebody who is a brutal, like, runs a regime, like you were just talking about, who makes the press, takes away the liberties of the press, who people can't protest, you know. And then you think of Snowden, Edward Snowden, you know, who leaks that the U.S. is lying and spying, and the U.S. wants to take this, like, really this wonderful, like, patriot, you know, and put him in jail. And at any rate, I can go on and on, I won't. but you get the idea, you know. It brought me back to something valuable about Cuba. And to this day, you know, I mean, it's just appalling that we haven't been able to shake hands and make up with Cuba and get along.
Well, I think it was Rodney King who said, can't we all just get along? And
exactly.
You know, that's actually fairly profound.
It's very profound. I mean, it's so profound. Thanks for saying that, because, you know, a few words, you know, powerful words. But Dave Giroux,
yeah.
I was at that
council meeting
benefit for the Kilauea school.
Yeah.
And you outdid me.
You won
that little plaque that said a surfer rentals.
Yeah.
Kona, you know? And I go, well, he outbid me. I don't know what you paid for it. My last bid was $13.
Oh, too bad. I was looking for Christmas presents there.
Well, you did good. I decided to forgive you because it was for a good cause.
Right. Well, I wish I'd have met you there because I hear you on the phone a lot.
It was cute for me because I asked the woman, she came and said, oh, Dave Giroux outbid you. And I laughed. I chuckled because I admire you so much. You, both of you, are such wonderful people, and you do such good work, and I feel enriched by your program every week, and have a nice day.
Well, thank you, caller. I really appreciate those kind words.
Take care.
All right, aloha. And we've got another person who's been waiting patiently. Are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for waiting.
Yes. Three quick responses in terms of the last few callers' concerns. Number one, yes, it is true that the amount of radiation is perhaps not great, but if you follow the advice given in that film that's showing on the public access on Channel 54...
Take Back Your Power?
Yes, you will notice that the chief bugaboo is, in terms of the blood chemistry, it produces inflammation. That means your body is constantly in a state of hurt. Your body constantly is in need of repair. This is not good. Inflammation causes oxidation. Oxidation causes inflammation. And then number two, the Angolan War was considered in America as a proxy war with communists. Okay?
Sure.
Number three, I've never purchased a Star Wars. I buy organic coffee, green beans, and roast them myself. And anybody who drinks coffee, first of all, it ain't good for your liver, whether it's organic or pesticide-growing coffee. If you buy it at Starbucks, unless you buy organic, I don't know if they offer that, then your body is in a real state. So I don't care if it says, a Kauai coffee or whatever. Kauai coffee is grown with herbicides and pesticides. You're poisoning your body. I don't care if it says, aloha, whatever, So once you drink a small amount of coffee, and once you drink like black tea, like oolong tea, which has caffeine, but will open up your arteries and blood vessels, and
is that better?
Pardon?
Is that better?
No, it's just an additional thing to help the blood flow. I've given up Pacalolo and alcohol for years, but I can't give up the coffee. So I've cut my coffee down to a very small amount, but I buy the organic coffee, and it only runs like $5 a pound for the green beans. I roast them myself. And, I would just think that, all these things that once you just, my hobby is like, since I was a philosophy major in college a zillion years ago, even older than your last caller, the best methodology is to just ask the question and then try to collect all the data, and using that inductive method, then you might get to the truth. But, I would never want to speak from on high on any issue. But when you look into these issues, then it raises more questions, and then you might become an intelligent person and have a wonderful dialogue with your own brain. But thank you, guys. I agree with the last caller. You guys always do an excellent job.
All right. Well, thanks for calling.
I'll leave it.
Okay, well, there's only a few minutes left in the show. And so, Jonathan, we were talking a couple minutes ago then about the KIUC special election that's coming up.
Right.
When are we going to get the language of the resolution or the ballot measure?
Tuesday next week, December 17th, is going to be another 5 p.m. meeting at KIUC. And KIUC management, at their sole discretion, is going to make a determination about what the ballot language shall be. they met with us, the petitioners, and we hammered out a rough draft. And then they went and listened to the community, and they're going to take input from what the community said. And then they're going to make up their own minds, and they're going to put down what they want.
So we're past the community input portion of the
That's correct.
Process?
That's correct.
Okay. I mean, do you have the draft? I mean, do you know what it's
there
before?
Yeah. I've got it online. So if folks want to look it up for themselves, they can go to p2pkauai.org, and you can see the draft language for the ballot petition.
Okay. Well, let's see. We've got somebody calling in. Probably be the last caller for the show here. So let's go and try to be quick.
Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box. Hold on just a second. I'm going to bring you up. Your volume up.
Nope.
There we go. Oh, nope. Missed him.
I guess no more calls then. Okay, just a few minutes left. So then we'll get that, and then the ballots will be mailed out here shortly.
The ballots should go out sometime in the first or second week of January, and I don't think they've made a determination yet about when in January is going to be the deadline, but I think it's somewhere towards the end of January. And the membership of the co-op will get to decide yes or no. Do they support these new fees? Yes or no. They'd be able to vote, yes, I support the new fees, bring those new fees on. Or they'll say no, no more new fees, KIUC. And then KIUC will have to go back to the drawing board and go back to the PUC and come up with plan B.
Are they going to have a voter guide with it?
They will not have a voter guide with it.
So you'll just get...
It's just going to be the ballot.
Yes or no.
Yes or no. Yes, I support the new fees. No, I don't support the new fees.
Okay. Well, that was the problem in the past where they had the on the issue with the
FERC.
The FERC, yeah. They had a little voter guide that told us how to vote on the issue.
Yeah, and it really did tell us how to vote. They had the pro side, which was their side, and they had the con side, which was their side also.
Right.
So that was pretty frustrating, but I think it was a learning experience for a lot of people, and a lot of people agree, hey, you know what, KAC, don't do that again.
Well, unfortunately, they did. You know, they continue time and time again to make big decisions that affect all the ratepayers here without consulting the ratepayers about them. So, I mean, it's like a good old boys club there that we're not members of.
Well, but we are members of it.
No, we're not.
It's our co-op, Dave.
We're not. I'm not a member because I have no say in the matter. You know,
you get to vote yes or no.
I get to vote yes or no.
How are you going to vote, Dave?
I haven't seen the question yet. I'm not in favor of new fees for that. But for one, there hasn't been an accounting of the cost. Now, they say, oh, we used to have 10 people.
Six.
I thought there was 10. Now they're going to have 6.
No, it was 5.5, and now they have 3.5.
Okay, so they've cut it in half. So we're down to 10% of the number of meters, and it's going to take only half of the or it's going to take half the people to count them.
Right, so that's because the people without meters are scattered all over the island.
Well, that's what you say,
right.
But is that true? I don't know. I mean, they decided to keep those, and maybe they want to keep them on.
Are you from
job,
Missouri? Are you from Missouri, Dave?
There's been no accounting of any of these costs. We're supposed to believe them, you know, and yet in the past we've been misled by these folks. So, no, they have not gained my trust on this issue. And
so you have a trust issue.
I do have a trust issue, you know. And so until I see that, because they just spent $11 million on smart meters that I didn't want in the first place, and now they're going to charge me for not having one when I wasn't responsible for the $11 million in the first place. So I think that's that really what they should do is they should charge the people with the smart meters additional cost because, you know, to make up for that $11 million. And not charge the people who didn't get them. You know, that would be more fair in my mind. Anyway. Hmm. So anyway, it's just about 6 o'clock, and we got
to
make room.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to leave it there.
Make room in the studio here for the Acoustic Luau with Marin coming up in just 1 minute. We're going to go out with one more song here, or a portion of a song from the new Rise of the Purple Sage, who are playing in 1 hour, or 2 hours, I guess, in Kapa'a at the Aston
Aloha Beach Resort. There we go.
So
if you're inclined, I think that could be a pretty fun evening of entertainment. So we have some new Riders of the Purple Sage music to go out with?
I thought so. But
I don't think you'll find it on their Wikipedia page.
Here we go.
Hey, aloha, everybody.
Aloha. Be back.
back here in a couple weeks.
Ahui ho and malama pono. Yeah.